Greetings. My name is Reverend Anthony Kelly, and I am a pastor and teacher, author, entrepreneur, father, husband, grandfather, and host of the Shadows Project podcast. Throughout my 50 years of Christian ministry, prison ministry and criminal justice reform has by far been the most challenging. On this podcast, we will uncover the critical truths and justifications regarding prison ministry and criminal justice, and why it is important to the church and to our communities for engagement. Join me in hopes of spreading more awareness and recognition to this overlooked and mostly abandoned church ministry on the Shadows Project podcast. The Shadows Project podcast is designed to show local pastors and churches what, why, and how they can organize and develop an effective prison ministry by purchasing our training workshop package consisting of a 200-color slide PowerPoint presentation at a cost of only $49.95. To purchase your training package for your church, conference, congress, and convention, go to our website at www.rrministriesinc.org. Greetings, my brothers and sisters in Christ and co-workers in kingdom building. I pray that all is well with you, your family, and your ministry during these challenging and especially changing times. I'd like to welcome you to episode number 5 of my Shadows Project podcast. Now, the complete training package consists of a 200-plus color page PowerPoint presentation that can be used in perpetuity to recruit, train, and enlist your members and volunteers for ministry in our nation's jails and prisons. Some of you may be wondering why I call this podcast The Shadows Project. Well, it is reflective of my new book titled Shadows, Serving with Character, Competence, Commitment, and Pride in the Absence of Accolades and Recognition. This characterization reflects the nature and essence of working in jails and prisons. The book is designed to inform, enlighten, equip, and encourage servant leaders and Christian workers who serve in the shadows of greatness of others in various forms of ministry to continue to serve with character, competence, commitment, and pride in the absence of accolades, in the absence of appreciation, in the absence of celebration and recognition, and in some cases, even without compensation. There are 3 important kingdom principles also presented in the book Shadows. The first kingdom principle is being willing to serve at the lowest level. And that's reflective of the Gospel of John, chapter 13, when Jesus girds himself with a towel and get a basin of water and goes around to wash his disciples' feet. And the apostle Peter immediately responded saying, "Lord, now I'm not going to let you wash my feet. That's beneath you." And Jesus said, "Oh, just let me do it, Peter, and you'll understand it by and by. You'll understand it later, just what it means and what I'm trying to model for you. And if you don't let me do it, you can't be a part of my kingdom." And Peter, still not understanding the depth of Jesus' teaching at that point, will say, "Well, not only wash my feet, but wash my hands, my head, everywhere." And Jesus makes an unusual but profound, deeply theological statement when he says, "One who is bathed does not need to be washed all over again." This text reflects character as the right manner. Catch that now, as the right manner in terms of acts of care and compassion. The second kingdom principle in Shadows is that one must be willing to serve where one is needed and not where one desires to serve. This is key in terms of ministering in jails and prisons, because you can't go to the prison seeking to provide ministry with your plan already laid out, your ministry all structured. You got handbooks and handouts and all of that. And you may have a specific ministry you want to do. And you may go to that prison chaplain and share with him or her your ideas for example, a discipleship training seminar. Well, the chaplain may have 12 churches already lined up to provide that ministry. And so you would not get in and the door would be closed. But the way you get into prison, the entree, the proper entree, is to let the chaplain know that you're there to assist him or her in his or her ministry. And so you find out what's the programming need of that facility, and then you develop your training or your ministry from that need. And the third, and let me just say this too about that principle is so key, because the implication is if you can't serve where you're needed, then you're not needed to serve. It means that much to make sure that you have the right motives in terms of ministering in jails and prisons. And the third kingdom principle in shadows is that servant leadership appointments are not based upon favoritism, but they are based upon fitness. And in the Gospel of Mark, in chapter 10, verse 32 and following, you also hear James and John coming to Jesus as they're on the road to Jerusalem for that fatal and finite travel to that sacred city on their way to the cross. Some were seeking seats but didn't understand that a cross was awaiting them. And James and John came to Jesus, say, "Well, Lord, when you get into your kingdom, let's let one of us sit on your left and your right." And Jesus responded to them, "Well, do you know what you're really asking? Are you able?" And of course, they responded, "Able," not understanding. Again, the challenge and the great sacrifice that Jesus was calling for in terms of his ministry, and that was the cross of suffering and giving your life for others. And of course, again, Jesus said, "I don't give seat assignments in my kingdom." He said, that's the Heavenly Father does that, and he does it based upon fitness, based upon competence. I know, James and John, you've been with me. You've been a part of my inner circle, part of my executive committee. I know we've had very close ministry together, but it's not about favoritism. It's about who's fit, and it's my Father who assigned the seats in his kingdom. And so there are some unique kingdom principles in the book Shadows that I find consistent with working in jails and prisons. And what we learned from that last principle is where competency is the right method. Again, competency is the right method in ministering in jails and prisons. And so in this fifth episode or fifth module of training that's a part of the workshop, we want to deal for a few minutes dealing with how to implement best practices and evidence-based standards of effective mentoring programs, especially to youth in at-risk situations and prisoners, as well as returning citizens. So there are three upcoming modules that will provide training in terms of mentoring or developing mentoring programs for those three categories. The first here then is our Ready for Life Mentoring Children of Incarcerated Parents program. And when we talk about youth who are at risk, it's very important to understand the risk factors. You'll find communities where high numbers of juvenile homicide, gangs, and drugs occur. You find youth that have parents in prison, in foster care, in juvenile custody, and out of school youth. Youth that needs lots of support and direction are those who we consider being in at-risk situation. And so The first program that your church may want to embark upon is the Ready for Life Mentoring Program for Youth in At-Risk Situations, dealing with children of incarcerated parents. And it's important that you understand the emphasis there on incarcerated parents. Now, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, you go to these sources and get these stats when you want to get more detail. Approximately 1.7 million minors, that is children under the age of 18, had a parent incarcerated in a state or federal prison at mid-year 2009. Parents represent 809,800 of the approximately 1.5 million prisoners held in the nation's state and federal prisons. The parents comprise 744,200 fathers and 65,600 mothers. People of color comprise the majority of these parents, with black men accounting for 57,000 federal prisoners with minor children. Hispanic men and white men accounted for 32,500 and 25,900, respectively, of federal prisoners with minor children. But what about women? Well, women in federal prison, as parents by race, seeing that black women, 2,200 are parents. Hispanic women, 2,300 of them had children. And of white women, 2,700 of those persons had children. And so incarcerated parents in the state system, now this is the state, I just told you about the federal. But in the state systems reflect the following. For black men, there are 262,400 black men who have children. Of Hispanic men, there are 127,600 men in state prison who have children. White men have 197,800 children. And let me back up, make sure I'm clear that Hispanic men, there were 127,600 of them who have children. Of black women, 16,100 in state facilities have children. Hispanic women, 8,800, and white women, 29,000 children. Yes, 29,000 children for white women who are incarcerated in state prisons. All told, black children were 7.5 times more likely than white children to have a parent in prison. And Hispanic children were more than 2.5 times more likely than white children to have a parent in prison. But this is key. Nearly half, that is 46%, of the children with a parent in prison had a black father. Let me say that again. Nearly 46% of all children with a parent in prison had a black father. And again, I have the state and federal documentation and also other sources and resources for studies in the training manual. And then we raise the question, we got to do something to stop our young people from getting to prison in the first place. Before we even talk about prison ministry in prison, you got to deal with how do we stop them from getting in prison in the first place. So that's why it's important that we have these crime prevention and violence reduction ministries and programs. Okay. Let's look at your project description. This is what it ought to sound like. And of course, the name of your organization, whatever that ministry is. But your organization will use mentoring as an evidence-based practice and reduction strategy to mitigate risk factors for youth in at-risk situations, including middle and high school students, out-of-school youth, children of prisoners, children in foster care, and youth offenders in juvenile correctional centers. So we identify all of the different categories of youth who are in those at-risk situations. We're not talking about at-risk youth. We're talking about youth who are in at-risk situations. Secondly, your organization will serve youth through best practices, mentoring initiatives, whose primary focus is one-on-one relationship building between mentors and mentees. Also a part of that is some group mentoring at a 1-to-5 ratio will also be employed to develop lasting relationships with emphasis on education, which is one of the many positive choices youth can make to ensure future success as opposed to prison. We must give them alternatives to prison. The mentoring program is supplemented by service learning activities, the program is being implemented by your organization. And of course, in your description, it would be in your target area. Of course, you will need to maintain and develop partnerships with organizations who demonstrated capacity and successful fulfillment of a national network of mentoring providers invited to participate in various mentoring initiatives. You want to make sure that your mentoring program partners indeed have the experience and the expertise in mentoring to children, especially in this training workshop, mentoring to children of incarcerated parents or who have parents who are in prison. So that's how your project description would be rolled out. Then you need to have, of course, document your program goals. And those goals would be to increase the number of mentors, especially of color, since there are so many Black youth who are in need of mentors whose fathers are not in those homes. And again, particularly males for children and youth in at-risk situations. The second goal is to increase mentoring services to children ages 6 to 18. That's your target group, ages 6 to 18, with one or more parents in prison or themselves under supervision of the juvenile justice system or middle or high school student and or in foster care. That's from age 6 to 17 or 6 to 18. And then, of course, in those goals, the third goal would be to meet the target area's anticipated need for mentors for your targeted program area, you. Those are the goals you want to engage in. What about specific objectives? There are some program objectives in this Ready for Life mentoring program for youth or children of incarcerated parents. First objective is that mentors who share similar characteristics of mentees will be recruited and will receive 6 hours of Ready for Life training prior to undertaking mentoring duties. You can choose your numbers. For example, typically, you might say for a 3-year program, you want to recruit or minister to 50 youth. That's 3 every year and for 3 years. So you would have 150 unduplicated youth in your 3-year program. You would have 150 unduplicated youth who reside in the program target area who will receive mentoring services through your organization, through your ministry over that 3-year period. There are some outcomes that you want to focus on in your mentoring program. Your organization will expose mentoring program staff and mentors to training and make sure your training is culturally sensitive and compatible. Your mentoring program staff and you know, based upon what numbers you can recruit, will be recruited and equipped to provide mentoring services to youth in at-risk situations. Now, like I indicated, in the training workshop presentation, we have all the various specifics in more detail in terms of how to engage in these particular strategies. But you do want to receive your mentees. These are your mentees. Your mentors, of course, serve your mentees, and they will receive one-on-one and group mentoring services. And of course, supplemented by age-appropriate and culturally compatible service learning activities in which the mentor and mentee can participate with other pairs. And so in that group setting, you might be dealing with some community service events or activities where the mentee and the mentor can participate in, and neighborhood cleaning programs or something special, serving elders in the community. Various program activities can also provide that required at least 4 hours of mentoring for each week. That's all you're asking for, that your volunteers will provide 4 hours a week in the mentoring program. That's the standard. That's the national evidence-based standard, at least the basic. But of course, mentoring can last, what, a whole lifetime, which of course is what we would want to see. And then, of course, you'd have your program evaluation. You'd have your training attendance logs, program feedback from mentors and mentees, data regarding your recruitment of mentors and mentees, your training and retention of mentors of color. Now, you're going to lose some in the recruitment process and in the programming. So that's why you want to make sure you recruit more mentors than you actually need. If you have 150 mentees you're targeting, well, you can recruit at least 200 mentors because you're going to lose some. Data regarding matching of mentees with mentors. You will have that data. You will have case management documentation regarding your mentee activities. You'd have program feedback from mentors and mentees, from the children themselves. You want to pay close attention to the children's response to the mentoring relationship. And of course, you will have pre and post program surveys. And then you'll have some, not program, but now you'll have some mentee goals, some things you want the children to reach. You want some improved school performance in attendance, achievement, and participation. The second mentee goal is psychological well-being. And again, we'll in the training workshop, you deal with all of those psychological factors that impact youth who are in at-risk situations, but particularly youth who have a parent who's in prison. And we have that detailed and outlined for you. Another mentee goal would be the reduction or no participation in gangs or violence, nor in delinquency or criminal activity. And you will definitely be evaluating and monitoring those goals. Yes. Now, in the group mentoring modules, now this is that monthly group gathering of mentor and mentees. It can be 1 hour that you can share, or several hours, or however you set your program up, your design. You'll deal with academic tutoring, such as history and reading and math and social services, self-esteem building, social skills development, and service learning opportunities we talked about. You'll deal with conflict resolution, family values, moral and ethical development, For boys and young men, you'll deal with manhood training. You'll deal with literacy, and financial literacy is also a part of that. Alcohol and substance abuse awareness prevention, HIV/AIDS prevention, career and professional guidance, college and higher education guidance, numeracy and literacy gains, GED credential or higher educational pursuits, or vocational credential. Those are all specialized training based upon the needs of your mentees that you could engage in. And so, again, it's based upon your program model. And as I indicated, as I bring this part to a close, because it has so many components, you got to deal also with the in mentoring vulnerable youth, and we call them vulnerable, especially children of incarcerated parents, because they face a myriad of challenges. And these are some of those psychological things we talked about or referred to earlier. You got to deal with some damaged self-esteem, some cognitive difficulties, emotional problems such as anxiety and anger and sadness, and emotional withdrawal. You got to deal with mental health issues, including depression and eating and sleeping disorders. These are some challenges that children of incarcerated parents experience. Behavioral problems such as physical aggression, educational disorders, including truancy and diminished academic performance, increased likelihood of involvement in the juvenile and criminal justice system, and also the trauma. For example, the post-traumatic stress disorder, as a result of witnessing a parent's arrest or a parent's incarceration. Can you imagine the mental anguish and trauma that has on a child to see a parent, police come and arrest the parent and take them to jail, and of course, through the court system and see them also incarcerated. So there are some typical feelings and situations you have to deal with for regarding the incarceration of parents, because let's look at some other causes of this incarceration of a parent. Fear, afraid of being abandoned, not seeing a parent, taken away from a caregiver. Another typical feeling is worry, concerns of well-being of incarcerated parents, not being taken care of. There's sadness on the part of vulnerable youth. There are many triggers. Incarceration, we indicated. Also divorce, living arrangements, number of things happening in school and around them. Feelings of guilt. You know, some may feel responsible or not getting good grades and etc. Isolation. Afraid to talk about a parent's incarceration because of the stigma of being in prison and being told not to talk. The shame. Some think how we feel. Think about how we feel about certain situations. You know, and again, as I indicated, that stigma, that embarrassment, the boasting may occur to cover the embarrassment of a parent being in prison. And then the silence by some of our vulnerable youth. Some are told by caregivers not to talk about, or perhaps even their parents are told, or told them not to talk about their incarceration. And then finally, there's confusion, not knowing what to do or how to handle it. So as mentors, you know, you got to try to realize the impact of a parent's incarceration. Listening to the children helps determine whether to discuss even the parent's incarceration or not. When in doubt, speak with the caregiver or ask the child. But don't play expert. Mentors, don't play expert, but listen or seek out help or the direction to take by making contact with staff, your program staff, and others. And so again, in this particular workshop, We'll be further dealing with the impact of parental incarceration. We'll be dealing with positive reinforcement and tutoring and counseling and how to make our children strong. As I indicated, there'll be specific training for mentors in terms of what you should do and how you should listen without judging, listen without belittling, listen without criticizing, listening to children, keep your feelings separate without placing your value system and beliefs, doing your one-on-one with your mentee. You know, there are a number of things in training and for mentors that are key, again, in mentoring to children of incarcerated parents. Excuse me. But you got to keep the caregiver involved. Don't ever shut them out. They are the gatekeepers and know the child's thoughts and concerns. The caregiver of that child promotes healthy mentoring between the child and the mentee. And then we have a section that we deal with in terms of the characteristics and how to deal with the needs of caregivers who are usually and could be at least 60 years of age and older. And so you do your program design would be the other factor that we will go with in terms of how to design your ministry, how to design your mentoring program for children in at-risk situations. We mentioned a number of program elements earlier about literacy, tutoring, and study skills, etc. But again, all of that is based upon your needs. You have a program element of adult mentoring. You have a program element of supportive services, follow-up services, referral services, and comprehensive assessment services. And of course, that would be provided by your program or your, if I'm correct to say, with your collaborating partners, your organizational partners could be education, social services, law enforcement, judges, police, you know, whoever you have. And some of them will be mentors, in fact, that can provide services to your program. And of course, the flow of services could look something like this. There's a comprehensive and objective intake and assessment. There's youth referral, some employment opportunities, case management and counseling, mentor recruitment, screening, training, and matching with mentee program participants. That matching itself is an extraordinary strategy that we have in the training workshop. Also, the linkages would be individual and group mentoring services, as I indicated, and then, of course, the support and wraparound services. Then you'd have your evaluation plan, all of those things we indicated about tracking and benchmarking your goals and your objectives. And your evaluation plan, of course, would be professional. And of course, you would have those persons of expertise who will, in fact, conduct the evaluation program. Have your monitoring plan. Yes, make sure you do a monthly a desk audit, and we call this one where your program staff would come together and you would look at issues like the general status of your program. You look at public relations. You evaluate program services. You evaluate data collection and research. You evaluate advisory coalition and collaboration. You will look at the volunteers. You will look at sustainability. And eighthly, you will look at human resources in terms of what you have to sustain your ministry and your outreach program. And of course, we would deal with volunteer mentor requirements. Of course, we'll deal with the, as we talked about, the mentees, identifying them based upon those factors of being in at-risk situations. You would develop a mentor and mentee agreements, and these will all be lined out in terms of what to expect, what to agree upon, and what the mentor should do. So there are a number of extraordinary parts. And I know a lot of this is just thrown at you, but in the training, again, a workshop, a presentation, you'll be able to see it all laid out in the various stages. I just want to give you a taste, if you will, of this extraordinary ministry to children of incarcerated parents. And again, that's ages 6 to 18. And again, we'll be talking more about the other mentoring programs to include the out-of-school youth, as well as a Ready for Life program for returning citizens, your aftercare ministry to prisoners who have been released. So in my sixth episode of our Next Shadows project, I will be presenting those evidence-based programming models to include the Ready for Life mentoring program specifically for out-of-school youth. And this will be ages 16 to 24. I hope you will join me and other persons in your networks for this most exciting training podcast. And it's scheduled each Sunday evening at 6 o'clock p.m. And so you are cordially invited to join this movement toward relevant and redirected ministry to regenerate, reclaim, and restore returning citizens, to strengthen families, and create safer communities. All my brothers and my sisters, we must engage in proactive advocacy as well as reactive strategies to prevent crime and reduce violence. As faithful believers in the dignity and worth of every human person, after you have completed the training through the Anthony Kelly Prison Ministry and Criminal Justice Training Workshop, you will be able to move from right belief, which is orthodoxy, to right action, which is orthopraxis, in sharing the good news of Jesus Christ that brings spiritual health and wholeness to those who will hear his voice. And so there's an urgency about this matter. Jesus himself said, the day you hear my voice, today, the day you hear my voice, harden not your heart. Otherwise, the beat goes on. And so to get more information about our training ministry resources, go to my website. That's the Reclamation and Restoration Ministries website at www.rrministriesinc.org. And it's important that you make sure you put RR Ministries Incorporated. That's INC. Amen. .org. Again, www.rrministriesinc.org. Or you can go to my other website regarding shadows in particular, to www.reverendanthonykelly.com. And that's like Reverend, abbreviated R-E-V, Anthony Kelly with two E's, K-E-L-L-E-Y.com. Again, www.reverendanthonykelly.com. God bless you and thank you for this privilege and this opportunity to share with you this extraordinary call, this calling, and especially this passion that I have for this ministry and have had for a number of years. And just, again, hope that you check out the resources and see how they might assist you in continuing to do your extraordinary work and your ministry to those who are disappointed and disinherited and disconnected to our communities. Again, God bless you. Be safe. Pray. Plan and persevere. Thank you.